Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Kirk Gray.
Hey, Kirk. It's Fred Schenkelberg here, and welcome to 2022. It's been a number of weeks since we've talked, and although we schedule these and batch them ahead of time, for our listeners' enjoyment, it's been 45 minutes since we started this call, and we spent a couple minutes catching up.
And we both switched computers.
And we've reloaded software, and we've, control-deleted this way and that way. But it brings up a topic, and it's just top of my head here, Kirk, is,
yes.
When do you do enough failure analysis that you just fail and try a different solution altogether?
I started on my desktop and you were on yours, and we had this echo problem, and I switched to a laptop and we still had the echo problem.
And then I switched to a different computer and we still had, then they cleared up.
It cleared up, but you had issues with the call recorder
and the recorder side. It wasn't compatible with the current version of the Skype package. And so it took two installs for that. And this is a quick summary, because at first we were checking settings, and then we were trying, well, let me try calling you. Sometimes just a second call works.
Right.
So we went through let's try to isolate it. Let's try to troubleshoot it. What are some of the quick fixes we know worked in the past? And, I was like, all right, but working, trying to make it work is a great way to troubleshoot it, because we were active in the system. If I look at just my system, I'd have to figure out somebody to call to see if it's working. And since you were already here, let's try that. But the point is though, and you've done this, right? You get an interesting problem or an interesting detail or something that's going wrong in a test, mm-hmm. or something's going wrong with a customer. When do you stop the failure analysis and go, we just don't know?
Well, sometimes the problem can disappear. I mean, in troubleshooting, by troubleshooting itself, suddenly you've actually moved apart. You've reconnected something that wasn't connected. You didn't know it. And, you really can't troubleshoot anymore. It works. Now, we went from my computer a couple times with your computer, recalling each other in different configure, you calling me, I calling you. So I think that in this case, we've kind of isolated. I mean, that's trying to isolate where the possible cause of the problem was or is a big part of failure analysis, of trying to understand. So,
we don't understand it though. We got one of our various combinations to work, but we don't know why the other ones weren't working.
And I would say the next step for you would be to check with somebody else if that echo is happening on when you call, because I had two computers. It came through the same way, but it wasn't until you switched to this other computer of yours that's problem disappeared.
Well, it underlies the concept, though, which is completely unrelated to troubleshooting, is redundancy is actually a pretty good thing. it allowed us to do our recording today.
Exactly.
But we spent 45 minutes.
But that cost a lot. We've got two computers.
I know. But it's the nature of our work, and we
redundancy is expensive.
It is. Yeah. But in practice, you're exactly right. If I'm troubleshooting stuff and I disconnect and deconnect, or I reboot, if it's software, a lot of times that clears registers. It does all kinds of stuff that could be an issue.
Right. Yeah.
And what I find that wholly unsatisfying, because that process almost never tells you what you did that worked. Just a reboot is like, well, I don't know what changed, but it's working, so don't move on. I think that attitude is dangerous. you know.
Well, the attitude is dangerous, but there's nothing you can do about it. When I was working on linear, you know, ion implanters, linear particle accelerators, right, or semiconductor equipment, you know, very complex room size systems. That sometimes I would take something apart and then put it back together, trying to troubleshoot it. And it worked after I fixed it. I mean, after I put it back together, trying to isolate the problem. And of course, I might have tightened something. I would have reconnected a connector, and there's nothing further you can do.
Right.
You can't, unless you can recreate that. Now, you know, obviously a sample of one is not very good. If you just had a failure of one out of three.
Or if you have an intermittent failure, that's really
tough.
Or
an intermittent, right. You've got to be able to stimulate it to cause the failure again. And that can be very difficult to do. But that's why, you know, you've really got to be doing quite a few units, I think, to ensure that you've got it. But
I'll get you to be a statistician someday, Kirk.
Yeah, I know. No.
But you're
no
right.
Question.
You're right.
Three samples is not going to tell you everything. And you need to realize that, you know, again, it does take some numbers. But I think that you try not to stop. If you do, I mean, if it's working, you can't fix it. You can't troubleshoot anything that's functional, working, working again.
And we were able to recreate the issue, and the way it worked, what you were experiencing, and I couldn't hear it, was that as I was talking, it would, and let me see if I can recreate it here, it would
right,
you know, it would over
right,
do it again
right, it would be like a second echo bounce back, some kind of feedback loop, or delayed latency, you know, repeat.
So if we were creating this system, right, and the Skype is just one piece of the system. So there's our computers, there's the networking equipment, there's routing. It's a magic that it works. But we would have to have oscilloscopes and all kinds of route tracers, and our software on both sides would have data logging and, you know, what's happening, what's going on, all the way from what's coming into your headset, your speakers, and what's the signal that generated it, and all the way back. And that would be amazingly expensive and complicated in itself to do, if we even could do it. You know, if we're in a lab, we might be able to. And a lot of times we create systems, and especially software systems, where they have a data logging type thing. So every action, every command is done, and you create this massive document that you can search to search stuff out. But as a layperson using Skype, we don't get that data logging feature, much less know what to look for.
No. And this is, it's a challenge. I mean, it's a big challenge in the final testing of a desktop computer in a company I used to work for. and you know, they'd have 30 laptops running. And I had a few in a thermal chamber to try and stimulate, especially software failures and reboot. And they would just be rebooting. And then suddenly you get what we always call the blue screen of death.
That's right.
BSOD. And and when that happened, that was like mining gold. It was like Bitcoin mining. Bingo, you hit something, you know.
You hit something, then you get into the logs and everything else, and you find that there's this one register or this one memory register thing or this one thing timed out. Or
this is what we had to do is I took out the batteries in the thermal chamber just because they didn't need to be in there and had a run on AC. But, you know, you wanted to make sure that you didn't lose that screen, because once you look. So we would put the battery in, and I would carry the laptop still running, make sure I didn't close it or whatever, still running, to the software guy that did the BIOS. And he could then tap into that and look at the whole log and reproduce what had happened. Or he could look through this, you know, very detailed code and stuff and see what had happened. And that's the way he figured it out. But it was just a really almost random chance that it would happen, you know, and it was very infrequent.
Let's go back to the point. Let's say you're in a factory and a piece of equipment is malfunctioning, or you're creating a product and you're in, whether it's Holt or wherever, and something's mm-hmm. not working.
Yeah. Any test.
Any test. I mean, the basic process is, can you reproduce it? Can you say, if right. I do this, it right. fails. If I, and you and I have both used like cold spray and hot spray,
oh,
you know,
absolutely.
Stuff on things yeah. and let's cool yeah. that. Let's heat that. Let's take a look at it. I like to start with the stuff that doesn't damage stuff or disconnect things or cut things apart. But at some point,
well, obviously when you start doing that, you've broken the integrity of the system. So,
right. But you start where you can. And let's say we get it isolated. And I remember one I did, it was a crystal, a little metal mm-hmm. can encapsulated mm-hmm. crystal. And,
right.
and the crystal failed. We could tell the crystal was not functioning. It was broken. It had an open circuit basically inside the can. And we were both looking at it. My buddy and I were looking at each other going, mm-hmm. the inside of this component is two little connector or plates mm-hmm. with a crystal soldered to it.
Yeah.
There's nothing else in there.
Right. Very simple.
Yeah. And so we cut it open and sure enough, the crystal was broken. And we're like, mm-hmm. how in the world did that happen? You know, and then it was, now we knew the failure mechanism, and that mm-hmm. was our problem with the,
right.
the this sound issue we were having, is we didn't know the mechanism, what was causing mm-hmm. that to occur.
Right.
And so part of the search was for, well, what's causing this? What's the mm-hmm. underlying mechanism? And then once you know the mechanism, that might just be the start of a whole nother apparition of, well, what could cause that? You know, what would make that fail? And so we,
right.
And long story short, we figured it out and it was a manufacturing defect. But
we had the same thing happen at Story Technology, I believe. And we, you know, through x-ray of the crystal can, we saw that. Mm-hmm. And I think it was dimensionally the soldering or the attachment to the crystal was incorrect.
Well, hey, you must have had the same vendor we had.
Maybe we did. That's probably the same time back in the 90s or whatever. But anyway, that's definitely something that is very was very stimulated. I believe we stimulated that through thermal stress.
Yeah, but the idea is that once you know the mechanism, then this, the next question is then, well, what set of forces could create that mechanism to
right.
manifest? And then sometimes you even get into, well, what was the, was it a manufacturing process and what allows that process to vary that much? Or is it a decision in the design that we decided to put that component at too close to here? Or is this timing was set inappropriately? What part right. of our process allowed us to make those mistakes?
And what is the history of that component? Did
right.
it work before in the original design and you didn't have any problems? And then suddenly you started to see cracking crystals?
Right.
Because then that would say, you know, they've got a manufacturing issue, which it ended up being.
Yeah.
And the same case with us.
Yeah. But at some point, I mean, part of it is if you're in development, right, near early prototypes.
Right.
And there are a lot of opportunities to go figure out what failed, because generally, in my experience anyway, a lot of things fail. And because, you know, we're still trying to get this thing to work and to work
sure.
as we wanted. And we're
sure.
making compromises, making changes. And,
right.
And but that part is often, well, I think if I do this, it'll work. And then you go experiment with it and mm-hmm. and then move on to the next one. You have just too many things to go fix.
Right.
But once you get to the field, it's a different set of constraints, right? It's, we right. don't really know what was the circumstances, unless you have tons of monitoring on your system. You don't mm-hmm. really know how the customer was using it or where they're using
exactly.
it, all those things
exactly.
and what its history was. And you have mm-hmm. all the added manufacturing variability that you is limited to some extent when you're in
right.
prototyping. It's sometimes very hard to get the, in some industries, you don't even get the product back to do
no.
troubleshooting.
Right. Low-cost devices sometimes are thrown away.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you never know. Unless you really have a significant percentage, and then, you know, in a Pareto, you definitely address that. But, you know, it's that's the difficulty of using field data, is a lot of times if the customer does misuse it or pushes the wrong button, they may not admit to that.
Or may not even know they did, you know.
It's may not even know they did.
That's the way it should work. And well, right. I just posted an article. It should publish on Monday, which will be a couple weeks ago from when this podcast gets posted. Look for an article by Larry George that's on what cost what costs the right data? What is the cost of not having the right data? And it's basically that idea of if you really need good field data, then you have to invest in actually getting good field data. If you, right. It's the same when we go to the lab to do testing. If we just throw right. the devices in the chamber and walk away and come back later and go, oh, yeah, right. they're not working or not working, we're not going to learn as much as if we invest in getting good data, monitoring it as we go or checking things like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Right. And that's where I say is not throwing it in a chamber, doing halt, just step stressing is planning mm-hmm. what you're going to monitor, what you're going to look for as far as the change or what you expect. And, you know, basically having the right sensors in the right places to know what's going on with the product and running the right software routines. A lot of times, you know, previously I would see them run tests that would test each section, say, of a computer individually as a mm-hmm. graphic card. Is this working?
Right.
But the real issue maybe comes when the whole computer is interacting is you're accessing all kinds of parts of the computer.
Oh yeah, we used to call that the white problem. It's the white space between the individual qualified components.
It right.
would be the timing between the hard drive and the motherboard would
right.
they wouldn't be happy with each other.
Right.
Even though both are in spec, right?
Right. You ask the hard drive, are you reading and writing correctly? Yes. And you know, you go, and that's the way this sequence of test suite went, you know. And I said, no, let's get these comprehensive running of all the system together interacting.
Yeah.
And that would be a much more comprehensive test. But
well, it is. When I was working with a division at HP that, you know, was making kind of business level desktop computers at that time.
Uh-huh.
And they said, well, we got to look at the math here because we have 6 different hard drive vendors that we could use, and they have 8 different, you know, sizes and,
yeah.
you know, configurations to them.
Exactly.
And we've got 3 motherboards, and we've got, yeah. you know, 5 optical drives, and we've got yeah. 4 monitors. And
that's 10 to the exponential, right?
Yeah. It's 10 to the too many
yeah.
units.
Yeah.
Because in the issue, so they ended up doing, based on their history with the different components and vendors and mm-hmm. stuff, is they looked at what were the field problems, which configurations had the most issues in the field.
Right.
And that narrowed it down to like a dozen. And then they would make those as kind of, these are our worst case. And even yeah. then it was really, you know, 1 in 100,000 would have a problem. So it was luck when they found it in the unit. The other strategy yeah. they used, and it worked for some of their systems, they would use the ones that were like the fast chip, slow chip kind of approach.
Right, right,
you know,
right, right.
We would yeah. use we would, you know, operate the memory card at the low end of its voltage just to
right.
to stress it a different way. And then we'd operate it at the high end of its voltage, or we'd put in different crystals, different timing
right,
circuitry.
Right, different bus speeds and things like that you
right.
could do.
Right.
So that'd be like, you know, you're talking about 4-corner testing, but, you know, in dimensional 4-corner, where you'd put, you know, the lowest speed processor under the highest load, or
right.
those kinds of things, where you combine corner conditions as much as possible.
And it ended up being, even with all this strategy and all these different ways to make things, and they were making, you know, incremental improvements and making their design mm-hmm. more robust. What they ended up finding, though, is that somewhere along the line, some material or some process changed subtly,
yep.
and it adversely interfered with another program, you know, another component or piece that was just subtly changed. And then we yeah. have, you know, a spike of failures from that one set of configurations. And it was like whack-a-mole, is the way they described it, because it's, you know, these two things are not happy with each other. But if we swap out that hard drive for this other vendor, it's fine. Right. It works just fine. And,
right.
and all over the map. And it was so many different permutations yes. to it. I'm trying to use some fancy stats words here for you, that it was really tough. But the overall strategy of just making the systems more robust to timing, to speeds, to temperatures, you know, whatever, I mean, just make it more robust, which is really what you and Greg Hobbs have been talking about for decades and decades.
Right. And ensure that's always there, that robust level of strength is always there. And behind the scenes, while you're doing all this, you know, with testing and everything, there's a bunch of procurement guys in each one of these companies and each level.
Yep.
There's a cheaper epoxy to, you know, use yep. an encapsulant. There's yep. a cheap, there's this other guy that gives me the parts is exactly the same spec. You know, all these things that are going behind the scenes because every manufacturer of every component in that box is trying to make it less costly, more efficient, whatever.
Yep.
And they could be changing things that said, well, it was a little change. We didn't think it really didn't affect, you know, most of our
You know, that's what we can do, Kirk. That's it. I think you just hit on one of the things. We got to experiment with this because we're still in, you know, supply chain constraints, and there's COVID right. shutting down factories.
Right
and,
now,
and companies for the last 2 years have been, you know, struggling to get whatever they can get to make uh-huh. it work and ship it. And so that's it. There was a router somewhere in the network here that between us that was using a duplex instead of a simplex device. Right. And it was doubling up my voice. That's
there
it.
There it goes.
That's it. That's I got it. It. That's the solution.
We found the problem. Now we just got to go find that router of thousands in the chain. Yeah,
that's right. But who knows, part yeah. of it is brainstorming. And part of it is investigating, look for the failure. Can you replicate it? Can you do this stuff? And sometimes you just can't get there from here.
No. You know? And in our situation, I think we got, you know, just the preliminary, what we went through for the 30 minutes trying to get this call, I'd say right now the focus would be on your desktop, the original computer.
The original one. Yeah.
So yeah, we changed four computers, or we yeah. worked with four computers,
yeah.
and it seemed that once you changed out of your computer to another one, that's when the problem resolved. So yeah. that would be the first step, you know, say, yeah. okay, I'll go back to my original and see if I can call somebody else, and we get that echo.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's always a big challenge. I mean, this is really tough. And failure analysis, sometimes you do end up saying, I can't
really
find
don't
it.
Know. Yeah, we don't know.
We just hope that we can reproduce it, or somebody yeah. comes up with a similar problem. And that may unfortunately be in the field if you don't do enough testing, or, you know, try to breach the fundamental limits of technology or achieve something. As much yeah. as you can when you're in development.
Yeah. We gave it a stress test. We've hammered on, and it sounded like it's working on both ends for 20 some minutes. So that yeah. might be a good time to, you know, make sure we don't stress it too much and end up having to scrap this recording.
Yeah, I could get overheated or something.
That's right. All right. Well, you know,
all right.
there's, you know, if, I mean, it is a real issue is, well, how much do you really do troubleshooting? And if you're listening to this and, you know, run into this, or if you have an idea or a guideline that you find works, or how do you know when to stop? You know, I know my personal experience, it was when my boss said, stop doing that, move on to something else.
Yeah. You know, spend enough time.
I can't let it go. I can't.
Yeah, I know. Really frustrating for us. Isn't it?
It is. But let us know. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. You can find a SpeakPipe widget that lets you record a voice message to us, or you can leave a written message. You can also find Kirk and I and the other hosts over on LinkedIn or on Ascendo. Reliability.com with our about pages. So there's lots of ways for you to join the conversation, and we would really enjoy hearing from you and adding you to the discussion. So with that, Kirk, let me hit the stop on the recording and let's make sure that works. And then
we'll
talk to you again soon.
I hope so, Fred. Okay. Talk to you again.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.